everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. I am in awe of the voice of Mariah. Mariah Haskins, welcome to WBAI and welcome to being in that studio. Thank you, Michael. What a wonderful gift. What a wonderful gift. Today is the last day of the year. Today is the end of 2013. You know, 13 is an unlucky number, they say. How was 13 for you? Is it coincidental that your disaster year happened in 2013? You think the hurricane kind of looked at us and said, oh, let's do it right before 2013, because that's an unlucky year for people. It's been a struggle for certainly WBAI, that's for sure. And a lot of you have had unusual struggles. Or maybe you've had unusual good fortune. We would like to hear about that. Because things have changed. And it seems that one thing I know for sure, 13 was a year of radical change for most people. Either for the positive or for the negative, but I want to hear from you. Of course, if you've been listening to The Positive Mind, it's probably been for the positive, because that's your attitude. But we want to hear from you today, and we're going to hear from you later. You might want to write down the telephone number. We are not taking calls yet. 212-957-2729. Included in this wonderful world of what happens if you're passing by New York City on this day. A few minutes ago, four guests walk in the studio. And just in passing today, we have four visitors actually in New York for the very first time walking by our studio. And so I invited them in to say hello and to tell you about their impression of being in New York on New Year's Eve. Hi and welcome. What are your names?
My name is Mimi. I'm from Mexico City. And I like New York because it's very kind with me and the buildings are beautiful.
Okay, and your name is?
Okay, my name is Carla. I'm from Colombia. And New York, it's pretty. Yeah, a lot of buildings. I love shopping. So I love New York.
Hi, my name is Elisa. I'm from Austria, and I love the colorful lights here. It's awesome. And I'm Eileen from Germany, and I love the skyscrapers because it's so different from D.C.
See, you guys are staying in D.C., and you're staying in D.C. as well, and you're all au pairs,
yeah,
right, working from different countries in Washington, D.C., coming to New York through the good graces of Linda Vanella. Right, to help you see what this night town is like tonight. Tonight, yes, you got this crazy time here in New York.
We are excited.
Yeah, what do you expect?
A lot of people and craziness.
Yeah, a lot of people and craziness. Can you handle craziness?
Yeah, I think so.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's the way it is here at WBAI. You just stop on by and things will happen. And luckily in the studio with us, we have the Linda Vanella, who we were talking about. We're going to ask Linda about her 2013. Well, let me ask Linda about her 2013 now. Linda, 2013 has got to be one of the biggest years of your life, right? What
yes,
a radical thing. What did you do last year? Focus or just on your, besides your personal life, but focus on your incredible work life.
Yes, I took on quite a challenge, and I'm so proud of myself and really happy that I learned so much. I think I like to say that I learned how much more there is to learn. Well, what I did was I went down to D.C. and I worked with active duty military people, soldiers and their families. And it was primarily for PTSD and trauma that came as a result of their time in the war. And so I had never done anything like that before.
Now, let me ask you something. These are soldiers who were coming back from the war.
Yes.
Who are in a psychiatric program.
Yes.
And they are psychologically disturbed having been through the war. Not that that caused it, but they could have been psychologically disturbed going in. Then they get to you, and your job is to do what?
To really, I was trying to think about that. To do an intake, and I worked as a clinical social worker. So my job was really to try to assess and work very closely with a professional team of clinicians to better understand what their problem was and allow them to get the help that they need. And I found that our government, in spite of all of the criticism, does provide amazing support and nourishment. So
what they did for you is the soldiers came back and they were damaged.
Yes.
They were either damaged psychologically or they were damaged psychologically. You had to deal with that psychological damage. All men? All men?
No, not all men. There were men and women. No, and it was a lot. I would say two-thirds men, male, and a third female. And we also have the care of their dependents, spouses, children.
So you got to take care of them. So what makes a person go into the Army in the first place, or the military in the first place, gets in question psychologically? Then they get in there, and then they get damaged. Then they come out, and they have relationships with people who are also going to be damaged.
Correct.
And you have to deal with all of these damages. Now, let me ask you something. A soldier who's up the front line, firing guns, shooting as many people as he can, when he gets screwed up, does he get screwed up differently than regular people get screwed up?
I think so, yes. I think that there's a lot of very specific war-related damage that occurs that I learned a lot more about. It's trauma, but it's trauma of a different kind. And I think that along with that comes the disposition of a person who had dedicated and devoted themselves to a cause coming into the military for many different reasons, but primarily because they want to fight for our country. They feel an allegiance and they feel a loyalty, and sometimes they suffer with a lot of guilt and shame, which they'd never had anticipated. So regardless of their own trauma, I think that they have a lot of anger and resentment and confusion because they come back wanting to get the help but not quite sure how to get that.
Well, I have that question about whether they go in because they want to fight for our country or they just want to blow stuff up. Most of the soldiers I ever met said, I went in there to blow stuff up. See, that was the idea. It wasn't that big of a thing. But they do get a team. They do get brothers. They do get a family. They get a family better than the family that they had. And then they come out of there, and they're left without their family, and their minds are shattered, and they're filled with this violence and these ways of acting out violence, and they have no way of toning it down. And then they get to you, and you have to help them sort it out.
Yes.
What a job. Hundreds of people, huh? Hundreds of soldiers, men and women, women with all kinds of issues, including sexual abuse.
Yes.
That you had to deal with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the military. Well, yes. One day we're going to hear a bigger story about that. But 2013, now you've left that job for now, and you're doing some private work with soldiers here in New York now, right?
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. Whew. Any of you know soldiers who have been through the heavy stuff and haven't recovered completely? She's clearly the person to see. Thank you. Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome, Armand. It's a pleasure.
It was a good piece of work, right?
Yes, it was.
You know, in our professional careers, I've had a few things that I've done that I looked at and I go, wow, that really defined why I do this. That was one of them, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it was for me. For me to be able to sit down and listen actively to soldiers who had suffered with a great trauma was quite a stretch for me. I'd never had that experience before. And my own posture politically was greatly challenged, so that I had to really put myself aside and in a very clinical way be able to sit and assess. And that for me was a great deal of stretching. So I wouldn't have given it up for the world. It was a wonderful year.
How much of what these soldiers did related to their having to kill people? Do they get spooked by it?
Yes, they do. Yeah, they're haunted by it.
Mm-hmm. A little louder, I can't hear.
They're haunted by it, yes. Yes, they. I found, and I've done a lot of reading about that, but it certainly challenged my own sense of instincts of people. And I did find that on and on again, when a person injured someone or killed someone, that there were a lot of repercussions that they struggled with and continue to.
Visions?
Yes,
images.
Nightmares. Yeah, recurrent nightmares. Yeah.
It's almost like, why can't we just kill somebody and get away with it?
I don't think it's part of our instinct. I don't think we're meant to do that, you know. I think that we struggle with that, and despite any kind of cause and validation, I think it's something that we as human beings struggle with. I don't think it's something that comes naturally.
I think if you're a psychopath, you get away with it. Then you can sleep after you do a crime. We had one guy on the show once who told us about how easy that was, you know, to do that. But if you have a conscience and it's left behind your ideal of I am here to take care of people, and then you have to blow somebody's head off. How do you? Violence. Well, that takes us to another step, and thank you very much, Linda, for
You're welcome.
Being with us. You know, you've certainly become a person who's different to talk to, because even as I see you talking to other people, I notice you listen with a different attention. There's a different attending that you do. It must have been very sobering.
Yes. I think that for me, you know, as I was writing the notes thinking about this today, I was thinking how when I would be dealing with the soldiers, I felt that the eye contact and the ability to be listened to was so healing that it challenged me to stretch my ability to be able to put myself aside and my own feelings, and to be allowing myself to really listen to somebody who had to be able to share that, to reconnect to the world. Because I feel that many of them came back and they were really disconnected from themselves, the world, their family, the service, the country. And I think that oftentimes that reconnecting is so vitally important.
And if you do, you have to connect with them without violence, without judgment. See, now here's the hard part. You don't like violence. And I know you don't like violence. I know that if there's a movie playing where you see a lot of violence in it, you don't want to watch it. Yet you're dealing with people who live this violence, and you had to listen to it.
Yes.
And you had to be there with it. But it was a different switch, wasn't it?
Yes.
It was different than a TV channel. This was now reality.
Yes. And it was reality, and I remember very clearly the very first few times when I had to sit in front of someone, a soldier who shared with me his story about how he couldn't touch his wife or his children because of what he had done there. And he had to express that to me. He had to describe that story. And I had to listen and put myself and my fear and my own whatever anguish or angst that I have about aggression aside to be able to allow him to offer that to me. And I felt that for me, it was such a stretch. And I didn't know after that interview who had come out that much better. I felt that I had to thank him because it helped me to really listen and hear him. And so, yes, it was a wonderful experience. And I did have to challenge my own fear of aggression or violence.
Well, 2013 was a growing year for you.
Yes.
Quite a thing, mm-hmm. quite a thing in a lot of ways. And now you're back with us.
Yes, I am.
It's a wonderful thing. I'm so happy about that.
Thank you.
Julian, we've got you here too. And since we've got Julian Joiello, Julian, you know how he spends New Year's Eve? Hanging out.
Walking around. I guess it's all about, we were talking about this before, it's all about kind of just being in New York City. And New York City is always this kind of this place where you walk around and things happen to you, and that's why it's so interesting. But New Year's is kind of that times 10, and it's just insane.
It's beautiful to be out there in some way, to be around it. Now, of course, a lot of people feel challenged, and so they want to gather in groups. They want to have parties,
right?
You know, and they want to be in a group and be around people. But being out there somewhere, especially the Roadrunners Club at 12 o'clock tonight, where the fireworks are in Central Park, it's one of the best firework displays. If you like firework displays, 72nd Street and 5th Avenue, you go in that entrance, the Roadrunners go there, and at midnight they set off these fireworks, and it's just beautiful. And there's a great group of people called the Roadrunners, and I'm saying that if you're somebody who feels a little more physically intimidated, it's not a bad place to go because there's safety in the Roadrunners, I think. For all I know, there's some mugger out there who's saying, oh, we're going to go get the Roadrunners. But, you know, it seems like a decent thing to do if you feel like being out there and breathing with the rest of the world. Or stay home and go to sleep and celebrate yourself. How was 13 for you? How was 2013 for you? 212-957-2729. Not yet. Not yet, but soon we're going to take your calls. But before we do, here's a little change. My sister Belle, my wonderful sister Belle, you probably don't know much about her. Belle Michelle DeMille is a psychologist, has her own practice. She's on the East Side. She's fabulous. And Belle she sent me a letter about someone who took a look at their fathers in a different way. And she just thought it would be valuable for the people. Here is an open letter in response to the movie The Wolf of Wall Street. I'm going to let you just hear this. It's 7 to 10 minutes of a letter written by a girl to her father about what she considers to be a betrayal. Because that's part of what this is. It's about seeing reality. So let me play this for you, just not to even go any further. I'll give this to you just as it is.
An open letter to the makers of The Wolf of Wall Street and The Wolf himself, as read by Nassima Diane Deemer. My name is Christina McDowell, formerly Christina Prusalis. I'm the daughter of Tom Prusalis. I had to change my name after my father stole my identity and then threatened to steal it again. But I'll get to that part later. Let me introduce myself. I was 18 and a freshman in college when my father and his attorneys forced me to attend his trial at New York City's federal courthouse so that he looked good for the jury. The consummate family man. And you, Jordan Belfort, Wall Street's self-described wolf, you remember my father, right? You were chosen to be the government's star witness in testifying against him. You had pleaded guilty to money laundering and securities fraud. It was the least you could do. And became a government witness in 24 cases involving your former business associate. But my father's attorneys blocked your testimony, because it would have revealed more than 6 other corrupt stock offerings. And, well, that would have been a disaster. It would have just been too many liars and too many schemes for the jurors, attorneys, or the judge to follow. But the records show you and my father were in cahoots together with MVSI Inc. of Vienna, Enet Inc. of Germantown, Maryland, Octagon Corp. of Arlington, Virginia, and Czech Industries Inc. of Washington, D.C., and so on. None of these companies actually existed, yet all of them were taken public by the one and only Wolf of Wall Street and his firm, Stratton Oakmont Inc., in order to defraud unwitting investors and enrich themselves. As an 18-year-old, I had no idea what was going on. But then again, did anyone? Certainly your investors didn't, and they were left holding the bag when you cashed out your holdings and got rich off their money. So Marty and Leo, while you glide through press junkets and look forward to award season, let me tell you the truth. What happened to my mother, my 2 sisters, and me? The day my father had to surrender to prison, I drove him. My mother had locked herself in the bathroom, crying and throwing up. Anyhow, after my father successfully laundered money in my name, hiding what was left of our assets from the government in a Wells Fargo bank account, I arrived home to discover multiple phone calls from creditors and attorneys threatening to sue me. He had left me in nearly $100,000 worth of debt. He left me and never told me. After all that liquidated money was gone from the Wells Fargo bank account, things got pretty bad. My younger sister ran away at 17. My older sister struggled to finish school in Texas. I couch surfed for 2 years, sometimes dressing out of my car, stealing pieces of salami out of my boyfriend's refrigerator in the middle of the night because I was so hungry and so ashamed I couldn't feed myself. Tips at the restaurant weren't cutting it. But here's the real kicker. I believed him. I believed everything my father told me. I believed it was the government's fault he was going to prison and leaving his little princess. I believed that by taking out all those credit cards in my name, my father was attempting to save me. I believed him when he got out and when he told me everything would be okay. I believed him until he tried to do the same thing all over again, until I was at risk of being arrested myself. So here's the deal. You people are dangerous. Your film is a reckless attempt at continuing to pretend these sorts of schemes are entertaining, even as the country is reeling from yet another round of Wall Street scandals. We want to get lost in what? These phony financiers fund sexcapades and coke binges? Come on. We know the truth. This kind of behavior brought America to its knees, and yet you're glorifying it. You who call yourselves liberals. You were honored for career excellence and for your cultural influence by the Kennedy Center, Marty. You drive a Honda Hybrid, Leo. Did you think about the cultural message you'd be sending when you decided to make this film? You have successfully aligned yourself with an accomplished criminal, exacerbating our national obsession with wealth and status and glorifying greed and psychopathic behavior. And don't even get me started on the incomprehensible way in which your film degrades women and the misogynistic, ass-backwards message you endorse to younger generations of men. But hey, listen, boys, I get it. I was conned, too. By my own dad. I drove a white Range Rover in high school, snorted half of Columbia, and got any guy I wanted because my father would take them flying in his King Air. And then I unraveled the truth. The truth about my father and his behavior, that behind all of it was really just an insidious, soul-sucking shame, masked by addiction, which we love to call ambition, which is really just greed. Greed and the desire for fame. For me, it's become goddamn unbearable, but I refuse to give up. Belfort's victims, my father's victims, don't have a chance of keeping up with the Joneses. They're left destitute, having lost their life savings at the age of 80. They can't even pay their medical bills or help send their children off to college because of characters like my father. Let me ask you guys something. What makes you think this man deserves to be the protagonist in this story? Do you think his victims are going to want to watch it? Did we forget about the damage that accompanied all those rollicking good times, or are we sweeping it under the carpet for the sale of a movie ticket? And not just on any day, but on Christmas morning. So here's what I'm going to do first. I'm going to hand you my shame. Right now, in this very moment. The shame that I've been carrying for far too long as a result of my father's collateral damage. Because each of you carry shame. I urge each and every human being in America not to support this film. Because if you do, you're simply continuing to feed the wolves of Wall Street. Yours truly, Christina McDowell. P.S. A quick update on Dad. He's now doing business with the Albanian government, and rumor has it married to a 30-year-old Albanian translator. They always, always land on their feet. Christina McDowell currently lives in Los Angeles. She volunteers with Inside Out Writers, a nonprofit for children impacted by the criminal justice system, and is currently writing her memoir. You can reach her at christina.mcdowell1016@yahoo.com.
And so you've heard a letter read by Nasima Dima, who was who's a guest and friend of ours and a therapist here at the center. It's quite potent to hear that, because when you think of Bernie Madoff and you think about his son committing suicide and the collateral damage, and we sit there and we envy the 5% who seem to be doing so well in so many ways. And you wonder. You wonder. I know a man. I know people who are so wealthy that they're afraid to go out of their house, because there's always somebody lurking outside waiting to get them. From the minute they grow up, from the day that they're born, they are being told, be careful. Somebody wants to take from you, because that's the truth. If you have $1 billion and anybody approaches you, if they approach you and they bring you a flower, you say to yourself, they want my money. That's the way you're trained, especially since the money becomes family money. It becomes your entire family has this. Now, if you think about a lot of the people coming over from the East, they have these family wealths. And one person has to protect the family wealth. It's not their own money they're spending. So they have to be cautious of everybody. So if you wonder why sometimes you look at people who are well-to-do, who may be from China or India, Korea, or something like that. You say, you know, of course they're cautious. They're trained that way. Because we, of the 95%, are going to try to hit them up for a buck. Well, not me, but a lot of people will. So you wonder how people get through. Then the other day, I pick up a story about China. Get this. In May 28th of 2013, a newborn baby was dropped into a toilet bowl by accident, as can happen, left there for 2 days. It's pretty horrible, right? Fire department comes, gets the baby, cuts away the pipes, doesn't damage the baby. The baby's in perfect health. Its first 2 days spent in the toilet seem to have done no damage whatsoever. Well, life is funny. Do you know what I mean? How could that be? How could that be? How could it be that someone could leave you in a toilet bowl, number one? Number two, how long could you be stuck 2 days in a pipe? And I got the details on it, too. Baby's very healthy now, is released from the hospital. And the rescue was broadcast nationally overnight before details of the unexpected birth emerged. The news triggered hundreds of thousands of comments on China's hugely popular Weibo service. It's amazing. So I ask you, when you think about how you got through, here are the bets, okay? When you were born, you were one of 200 million sperm. Yes, one of 200 million sperm, maybe even more. One of you decided to fly upstream, kill off 199,000, or 999,999 other sperm. You had to beat them out. Maybe not kill them, but you had to beat them out. You had to climb over their bodies to get to the egg. You got to the egg opened the door and looked inside and said, "Hey, you're cute, I'll let you in." They may not have let in the other guys. Out of 200 million cells, you survived. Does it ever make you feel special? Does it ever make you say to yourself, "Holy cow, lucky sperm were I"? And truth, I know many women will resist this, you are one of those sperm. And truth, men, you were the egg. You had to be both. So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Going to be bringing you a lot more programming later. Trying to remind you that 13 is an unlucky number, but may have been a fortunate number for you last year. And after we take our break, we're going to be doing a telephone call-in. Well, I'm going to read you one more piece and talk to you about one other thing. And then we're going to take your breaks. But my very special thanks and my celebration for the additions to my life, which include Linda Vanella and Julian Joyello and my sister Belle and Jamie Ross and the welcoming back of so many good friends. Just the fact that there are so many people who I love and I know could love me. It's a big deal. Maybe that's the real question. Where has love happened or got lost during your 2013? We'll be right back with you, my friends.
But there's nobody like him.
Give to the number 2W.
And we're back with you with the Positive Mind on the penultimate program for WBAI. The last program, 2013, the last Positive Mind. We're going to be back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm bringing you something special. It will not be live. It's going to be an encore recording, but it's fabulous. What is the name of it, Julian?
Courage, Love, and Fear.
Courage, Love, and Fear. Oh, yes. The name of any book, if I ever wanted to write a book, beautiful. It would be called Courage, Love, and Fear.
Talk about subject, right?
Talk about subject. You know, talk about courage and talk about subject and talk about love and talk about fear. If you were to call us in at 212-957-2729, not right away. Not right away. I got one more thing. Well, maybe we will take your calls right now. 212-957-2729. At the gate. Here they go. Ready. We're going to take a call as soon as you want to call. And here's what I want to know. How was 2013 for you? Would you call it a positive year or a negative year? And if you called it a positive year or a negative year, would you say what portion of love increased or decreased in your life? What's your love thing? You know, something happens to a lot of people who are older. They have fond memories called nostalgia. And I want to be able to address nostalgia and what nostalgia means to you, because it's important to get a take on what it is. 212-957-2729. Nostalgia isn't what it used to be. It's looking a lot better. Nostalgia is known to counteract loneliness, boredom, and anxiety. You get bored, you wisp in your mind, you go back to something beautiful. It makes people more generous to strangers, more tolerant of outsiders. Couples feel closer and look happier when they share nostalgia. On cold days in cold rooms, people use nostalgia to literally feel warmer. Do you know that? Remember being at the beach? You'd be freezing outside and you could think of the beach and, oh, all right. Nostalgia does have a painful side. It's a bittersweet emotion. But the net effect is to make life seem more meaningful. And you know, I think it makes death less frightening. Because when people speak wistfully of the past, they typically become more optimistic and inspired about the future. I think nostalgia makes us a bit more human. Nostalgia was originally described as a neurological disease of essential demonic cause by a guy named Johannes Hofer, the Swiss doctor who coined the term in 1688. He made the word nostalgia, and he made it a disorder. The military, Linda, you'd be interesting. The military physician speculated that its prevalence among Swiss mercenaries abroad was due to early damage to the soldiers' eardrums. That's what they did. And they said nostalgia comes from damaged eardrums caused by the unremitting cowbells of the Alps. In the 19th and 20th century, nostalgia was variously classified as an immigrant psychosis, a form of melancholia. The defining feature of nostalgia in England are also thought of defining features in Africa and South America. The topics are universal, reminiscence about friends and family members, holidays, weddings, songs, sunsets, lakes. The stories tend to feature the self as a protagonist surrounded by close friends. So nostalgia is a beautiful thing in many ways. What do you nostalgia about? Now, many people who have gone through this past year, because of the age of some of our WBAI members, have lost a lot of people. Lost meaning, you know, people died. And people who you were close to, people who you remember, movie stars die, people die and you feel like you're being left alone one at a time. You know, I wonder what it's like being the one raisin in a box or the one nut in a box of nuts when somebody picks up every other nut and eats it and you're getting down to being the final nut. You know, and you say to yourself, is that going to choose me any minute now? Is that what death is like? Waiting to be the last nut selected? Or wanting to see when you're going to be selected? I wonder. I'm not too concerned about death because I'm not afraid of it. I kind of see death as an opportunity, a door open to another kind of experience. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Having made peace with death early in my life made life so much more easy, whereas so many other people I know are terrified of death all the time. Linda, do you find in the older people that you work with that death is an important issue?
Sometimes I do see among more of the males, I think, than the females, interestingly enough. I think that nostalgia does play a part because when people are dealing with death, they look at their former experiences that gave them pleasure so that they would not be afraid of death, but they would in some ways welcome it as that opening door into another place. So I think that there's a whole host of mixed feelings around the subject of death for both males and females.
But what about during the military? What about military and their relationship to death? Soldier can't be too afraid of dying,
no,
right?
No. I think that's something that, as you said, when you mentioned that you faced your own thought of death early in your life, I think that part of soldiers do that. I think that that's part of the basic training. I think that happens, especially when there's a deployment. Yes, they are basically helped to look at that subject of death and prepare for it. They'll prepare the dependents. It's part of the whole discipline.
So it's a very interesting thing you're saying, Linda. Soldiers who return from the war are trained not to fear death.
Yes.
And when we look at them as ordinary people and we say, well, you're just like me, but you're not afraid of death. Well, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, if you look at me and you say to me, hey, I'm just like you, Armand, but you're not afraid of death, it is a big deal.
What I do find oftentimes with the military is a lot of survivor guilt that others have died and they haven't. In that same concept of facing their death, it's almost like, well, I didn't die there. Now, what do I do now with my life?
Almost like it's okay if I do die.
Yeah, yeah. Very almost like a welcoming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, I'm not afraid of death, but boy, I hate getting a cold. 212-957-2729. This is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, and we have Rick on the air. Hi there, Rick. Welcome.
Well, hello, Armand. How are you?
Nice. Nice to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. You changed up a little bit on me as far as whether 212 versus 213 was better or not. And then
no, I didn't mean to change up. You could go to both.
Well, they kind of intertwine.
That's what I thought.
I for me, the year of 2013 was a good one overall. In many respects, physically, emotionally, financially. And I think, as you know, what caught me was the name of your show, The Positive Mind. I think a lot of anybody's outlook has to do with whether they have a positive outlook or not. I'm definitely a glass half full kind of guy. And that's with having experienced a lot of death in my family.
You've been around recently a lot of death?
Not too recently. The most recent was the death of my niece, my goddaughter. She was 7. Wow. And she died of cancer on the day after Christmas. So that this time of year is very difficult for my sister and our family. And then 2 days later is another anniversary of sorts, is the anniversary of my brother's birthday, and he's been away from us since 1996. He was killed in an accident. And we lost my father in an accident. So we've had a lot of close people.
Let me ask you something. It's a question I have, Rick, if you don't mind telling me. You said lost your brother. You mean your brother died?
Yes.
And when you say your father, do you say my father died?
That's correct.
Can you use those words and let me hear if that changes things?
Use the words that they died?
Yes.
Well, my father was killed in an accident. He died. My brother was killed in an accident. He died.
Let me ask you something. When you say the words he died, does it feel different than say we lost?
Perhaps it's just semantics, but I don't know that it sounds any different to me.
It's just a
softer form of saying it.
Yeah, I see a lot of people doing that nowadays. Passed, you know, when our sister passed on 4,000, you know. I think that there's dealing with death itself. And that sometimes the softening of it gets you not to really deal with the reality of it. But that's a rough time you've had. But you're saying something very important, Rick. And this is going to be the quote of the year. Are you ready? Everybody take out a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper, and you will have my slogan. If you have something that is half full as opposed to half empty, if you have a cup that's half full as a half empty, you have got to feel thankful, right? You got to say, whoosh, lucky me.
Absolutely.
And so my slogan for the year is gratitude is the attitude.
That's a good one. I'm going to steal that one.
You got it? I'm giving it away for free. It's not stolen. It is sent out to you. Gratitude is the only attitude. You know? Well, maybe not the only. You could have a different attitude. You could have platitude could be your attitude. You can have any other bunch of things if you want. But gratitude is the attitude by which I live. And gratitude is the attitude that I think would save a lot of people. And you, Rick, I thank you so much for being here with us and bringing us your soul.
I very much appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in.
Take care.
212-957-2729. Most people report experiencing nostalgia at least once a week. Most people feel it 3 or 4 times a week. The reported bouts are often touched off by negative events or feeling of loneliness. So you nostalgize. You know, you play the old music. You play, you listen to Frank Sinatra. You turn on. The other day I watched A Christmas Story. No, I didn't watch A Christmas Story. What was the name of that thing?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. I wanted to see It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. And then I couldn't resist it. I went out to see Jimmy Stewart Goes to Washington, or, you know, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I had to follow it up, just did short bits. It was terrific. Is it nostalgic? It reminded me of something beautiful. They're not simple exercises in cheeriness. The memories aren't all happy, and even the joys are mixed with a wistful sense of loss. But on the whole, the positive elements generally outnumber the negative elements. This is Armand DeMille. Hey, another caller on the air. Let's take Mark. Mark, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Oops. Nope, I can't take Mark yet. Here it is. Mark, hi there. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting. Mark?
Yes, hello, Armand.
Hello, Mark. Welcome to WBAI.
You are an unbelievable person. I've been listening to you forever. And I want to come to see you the next time, but I want to say that I feel kind of the opposite of your last caller.
Yeah.
Who had a great year.
You had a bad year, huh?
Yeah.
What'd you lose?
Well, it's actually medically related.
What'd you lose?
I didn't lose anybody.
Well, no, but I mean, what did you lose in your physical health?
My health has declined. I have a situation that's a 15-year situation, unfortunately, for me. This past year, it's taken a severe turn.
Is it COPD or something like that?
Excuse me?
What is it? What is the ailment?
CH, chronic renal.
chronic renal failure you've got going on. My God, that's a difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. I've had it for 15 years. I'm lucky for that. But
a turn for the worse.
Yes, I'm very close to, failure.
So you're close to failure. How? What does it feel like, Mark?
Is
it all bad?
Yes, it's devastating.
On top
of that, the week of Christmas, my doctor of 15 years decided that, he's got a bigger position and said he can't be my doctor anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, let me take you back just a step, Mark.
And just to go back to who I lost my best friend and his wife right at the end of around this exact time of the year in 2009 and January of 2010. December and January, his wife and my friend, with the same condition. And that's been preying on me forever. But nostalgia, which you were talking about, I've been seeing nostalgic, movies from the 60s, 70s, 80s, particularly music.
Let me speak.
It's great to see it, but it's depressing because
let's try it this way, Mark. You're depressed as you would be physically depressed. There are physical ailments that are going to take a toll on somebody, and it's going to bring them nearer to the end of time, and you're going to look at your own death, and you're going to say, okay, here it's coming. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And you're not going to feel good about that. Yet, on another hand, you listen to the positive mind on the radio,
absolutely,
and something about you picks up a spirit from it. And something about it keeps your spirit going. See, you may have looked, and let me ask you something. When you were a kid, your dad wasn't around much, was he?
Neither of my parents were around much.
Right. You were kind of an orphan.
Well, I wouldn't say that. But, I wasn't, I didn't feel any love or saw love.
Exactly. You didn't feel any love or saw love. So when you grew up, you depended on people, and you had to depend on people to a fault because there's no piece of you that ever trusted you could depend on people. Then you depend on a doctor, and your doctor says, I'm going to leave you. Then you depend on two friends, and they go off and die somewhere. And, this has not been easy, but your spirit is what's going to carry you through to the next place, wherever that is. And wherever it's going to be, Mark, someday I'm going to meet you there. So wherever we go, if we just go into the soil and become atoms, I'm going to meet you there because I'd like to shake your hand. And maybe before it's all done, you can get in here to see me. I'll make that happen any way you want. Any way you want. You just call my office and my arms are open. Mark, so...
I've called your office, I just didn't pull the plug.
Okay. Well, it's a good reason to pull the plug, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mark, you have my spirit.
Yes, Mark, and you have mine as well. Anytime, I would love to speak with you. I'm here.
And you have me, too.
You got the three of us. You got a family.
You got us three.
You got a family. To you, Mark, and to all the other people who are standing by trying to call in, you've got us. We could be your family. And WBAI is your family. Thanks for calling in, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Omar.
You know, what we do through the station. We got time for one more caller. Barely enough, right? Barely enough. See, they're not simple stories. Nostalgic stories often start badly with some kind of problem, but they tend to end well. So it's not all a bad thing. So if you find yourself going there, don't say that that's what's making you get depressed. And people will tell you, don't think about that. There's a warm glow that comes when you feel nostalgia through music, through visions, through movies. Of course, memories can also be depressing. And they said that nostalgia could worsen the problem. But feeling of discontinuity, feeling of being broken off from things that you have been broken off from, that's difficult. It's difficult. And maybe less difficult is thinking, going back in your memories and floating downstream and feeding the memory bank and bringing me along with you and say, Armand, I'd like you to meet my ex-sister. Armand, I'd like you to meet my ex-wife. Just introduce me, you know? Take me with you. I'd love to join you. One more call. Rashida, of all people. Hello, Rashida. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Armand. Loving you to life. And I do not use the word death. I'll say transition, and I'll say passed on, because I know there is no death. I know there is no death. I know that we leave these bodies when they no longer serve us. And I know that there's a continuum, and I know that life is eternal. And this is what I know, and I know this for sure.
So, I mean, I don't know, the word death has no meaning.
No, it doesn't.
So why be afraid of the word death? It's only the word means...
There's no word death.
It means a stopping of certain amount of physical
functioning. Right, the body dies. Absolutely.
That's it.
Ah,
you use the word.
To a point where it will no longer serve us.
Rashida, when am I going to see you again?
Really soon, and are you familiar with Dr. Brian White's Many Lives, Many Masters?
Yes.
Okay, all right, so, but soon, I have to come down to 57th Street and stalk you.
Yeah, please.
Would you like to be stalked?
And cook something for me. You got to cook something for me.
Okay, let's see. What did we say? Oh, you said you like bean dishes.
That's right.
Yes, yes, yes. And I do, and everything, curry chickpeas. Oh, I
that's it. It's exactly what we want, and we're going to have that, and we're going to share it with the people who work here, who are the most beautiful people at WBAI. We have to be going, Rashida.
Okay,
but
before January is out.
Before January is out, right.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being Armand, and thank you, Julian, and
Linda.
Your name is coming to me.
Linda. Linda.
Yes, the fact is we have to have that powerful feminine energy.
That's it, woman. I like that. Thank you, Rashida.
Okay.
Thank you.
Peace and blessings.
Look to see you soon. Happy New Year.
We do have to be going, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. I can't believe it. We have a... we can't take any more calls. We have to be going. Now listen. Listen, my friends, if you want to hear a recording of today just for kicks, you can go to WBAI.org or you can go to thepositivemind.com. You're listening to Brent Lewis and his album on Jungle Bells. If you ever want to get your hands on that, send me an email wishing me a happy new year. I'd love to hear from you as well. I try to respond to as many as I possibly can if they're not too long. A wonderful year spent with you, and a wonderful year spent with all the people at WBAI. My special thanks, Michael G. Haskins, his beautiful daughter, and the rest of the new people at WBAI who seem to be making such a difference. You helped us out, friends. You pulled us out, you know? We came out of the storm. We're getting there with your help. Back with you tomorrow for a special program, and then following that Tuesday, special love. Bye-bye for now.
divided. We live in a very divided country. Like, it's crazy.
America is a fundamentally good country. We have good people with good values who want to do the right thing.
We often get on with the job.